From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on this day in Maine, Friday, December 12th, 2025. The Mills administration confirms that the officers who patrol the Statehouse complex will soon be managed by the Maine State Police. As Kevin Miller reports, the change apparently caught some officers by surprise.
In an email first reported by the Bangor Daily News, Maine Public Safety Commissioner Michael Soschuk informed Capitol Police officers that the unit will gradually be absorbed by the much larger Maine State Police. Public Safety spokeswoman Shannon Moss said Friday that the transition will happen over several years through attrition, as state troopers replace retiring or departing Capitol Police staff. Moss said the shift will, quote, better support the growing demands of the Capitol by improving efficiency and coordination. But Kevin Anderson, executive director of the union that represents Capitol Police officers and detectives, says this never came up during the negotiations over the new contract that was signed on November 1st.
There's uncertainty. They don't know what the future holds. You know, they're assured that their jobs aren't in danger, but when they leave, they're going to reclass those positions to trooper. You know, one question I know that was asked, so essentially there's going to be no promotional opportunities for these folks either. They don't have anything to look forward to like normally you would climb the chain.
Anderson says that contract still applies, and the union is asking for meetings with state officials to discuss the changes. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
The chief of the Houlton Band of Maliseet Indians says 40% of tribal citizens nationwide could lose health insurance if enhanced subsidies through the Affordable Care Act are allowed to expire at the end of the year. Clarissa Sabatis says that will also affect local tribal health clinics, which rely on insurance payments.
We have what's called purchased and referred care. So our ability to pay for things for our clients and to provide care does get minimized. We have to set priorities.
The enhanced premium tax credits were created during the COVID pandemic to make insurance more affordable for middle-income earners. Premiums will increase an average of 77% in Maine unless the subsidies are extended. The city of Lewiston is being asked to move forward with a planned $300 million artificial intelligence data center in a vacant mill building downtown. City Administrator Brian Kainroth says the project would bring in more than $700,000 in annual tax revenue and create 20 to 30 jobs.
It used to be textile mills, and now we could repurpose them in 2025 into AI data centers. And still using these buildings and keeping also some of the nice historic character that they provide to the downtown.
Data centers in other parts of the country have sparked public concerns over electricity and water usage. A spokesperson for the developer behind the project did not immediately return a request for comment. The University of Maine at Orono is asking its departments to cut expenses by 7% to make up for an almost $18 million budget gap. Maddie Smith has more.
Terminated federal awards, decreased enrollment in recent years, and deferred campus maintenance all contributed to the deficit, according to university spokesperson Samantha Warren. All options are being considered to balance the budget, including retrenchments and layoffs. The decisions will need to be finalized by February when the university will present its proposed budget to system officials. Several other universities in the system are managing modest budget deficits, but UMaine is the only one so far to have issued reduction targets. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Maddie Smith.
The New England shrimp fishery will remain closed for at least another 3 years. Federal regulators said yesterday they found no improvement in northern shrimp stock status and new lows in abundance. The fishery has been closed for about a decade, but last winter, Maine, New Hampshire, and Massachusetts launched an industry-funded sampling pilot to learn more about the fishery in a warming Gulf of Maine. Fishermen were allowed to harvest about 58,000 pounds of northern shrimp during the pilot, but they caught just 70 individual shrimp, totaling less than 3 pounds. Maine health officials say they've made contact with an individual who may have been exposed to a rabid raccoon in Wells on Monday and gave them recommendations for follow-up care. The state CDC said in a press release Thursday it was trying to find the person who tried to help move the raccoon out of the roadway. The raccoon later tested positive for rabies. Rabies infects the nervous systems of humans and other animals, according to the CDC, and is almost always fatal once symptoms develop. And now we're joined by Maine Public's chief political correspondent, Steve Missler. He's here to talk about the political groups gearing up to spend big to influence the U.S. Senate race next year and why voters should pay attention to them, even if they ignore the deluge of ads that will soon be unleashed. So, Steve, if there's one thing that seems to unite voters, it's that they really dislike political ads, and maybe that so much money is spent on them. And yet, you report in the Political Pulse newsletter this week that the U.S. Senate race could drive some $300 million in spending on congressional races in Maine next year. So why is it important to dig into these political groups that we're talking about today?
I mean, that's a totally fair question, Ari. Our political system has become so awash in big money that voters and even political reporters can become sort of numb to it. And there's studies out there suggesting that the central goal of all this cash, persuading voters, doesn't really work all that well. But I think the simplest answer to your question is that pulling back the curtain on these groups and their funders is a way of understanding the actions of the politicians that they're designed to support, the issues they campaign on, and the policies they push or support if they're elected. And that's why we're doing this.
Because, of course, this money isn't flowing to these groups out of altruism or charity.
That's right. It's influence, and that's why it's important. And that's probably why some of these groups and the partisan organizations that work alongside them take a lot of steps to obscure the source of their funds.
And to be clear, we're not talking about donations to the actual candidates, right?
Correct. This is about the groups that operate separately from the candidate campaigns. And you'll often hear them described as outside spending groups. And to make things even more confusing, there are several kinds of those. You have super political action committees, often called super PACs. There are party committees, which are aligned with the two major political parties. And there are dark money groups, which are basically nonprofit organizations that can spend money on elections, but don't have to reveal their funders, unlike the party committees and the super PACs.
So in this week's newsletter, you write about how a constellation of these groups are poised to spend or are already spending millions of dollars to influence the Maine U.S. Senate race. And you've also created this guide that highlights connections between the organizations and donor information to the extent that you can find it.
Exactly. The dark money groups make it difficult because they're legally allowed to shield donors. Sometimes you can find clues in their tax filings, but a lot of it is really a black box. That's not the case with super PACs and party committees. They have to reveal the contributors. However, even that disclosure can have its limits if the super PACs receive dark money contributions. And increasingly, a lot of them do. Dark money spending on elections soared to nearly $2 billion during last year's election. Several of the super PACs we highlight in the newsletter are heavily financed by dark money nonprofits. And several of the super PACs are essentially extensions of the party committees. The Brennan Center for Justice, a nonpartisan organization, calls them shadow parties. And both Republicans and Democrats are expected to use them in the Maine Senate race, just as they did in 2020 when that contest shattered state spending records.
And in fact, some of that spending has already started, right?
It has. Some of the groups we've highlighted are already pumping out broadcast and digital ads. Some are attacking Republican Senator Susan Collins. Others are designed to boost her reelection chances. And much of this early spending is coming from dark money groups with connections to the political committees, including this one by the group One Nation.
Senator Collins has advanced $71 million in new funding for Maine's hospitals and health systems.
I appreciate everything she is doing.
Everyone agrees, Senator Susan Collins is getting results. Call and thank Senator Collins. Tell her you appreciate all she's doing for Maine.
That ad started running just a couple of days after Governor Janet Mills announced that she was getting in the race to challenge Senator Collins next year. It's designed to boost Collins, but as you just heard, it uses a news clip of the governor expressing appreciation for Senator Collins to try to do that. One Nation is a dark money group. It doesn't have to reveal its donors. And it also contributes money to other Republican super PACs with ties to GOP leaders in the Senate. And the Democrats have their own counterparts. Both sides have been spending money over the past several months, and what we're seeing now is just the beginning.
So with that in mind, you've created this guide to these groups that listeners can check out at mainpublic.org/pulse.
Correct. It's not an exhaustive list, Ari, and it's certain to get longer. But we'll try and update it as more groups form and start spending. And hopefully, we'll be able to learn more about these organizations and their funders along the way.
That was Maine Public's chief political correspondent, Steve Missler. A reminder that you can find the Political Pulse newsletter at mainepublic.org/pulse or have it delivered straight to your email. A federal judge has ruled that the Trump administration unlawfully ended a federal emergency management agency program designed to help states prepare for and mitigate the effects of natural disasters. Molly Enking has more.
20 states, including Maine, had sued the Trump administration over cancellation of FEMA's Building Resilient Infrastructure and Communities program. The BRIC grant program was established after Hurricane Katrina to give states funding to prepare for disasters. A 2016 study found that for every dollar spent on disaster prevention, it saved $6 in recovery efforts. FEMA had distributed $4.5 billion in grants over the past 4 years. The judge found that the president lacked the authority to terminate the congressionally funded program through executive order. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Molly Enking.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Join us tomorrow morning at 8 for Weekend Edition on Maine Public Radio. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.